Welcome to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, presented to you by Hetcher University. If you've landed here, you're probably passionate about how horses help people. Whether you're an instructor, therapist, in the business, or have experienced equine-assisted services yourself, we're glad you're here. Join us as we talk about the benefits, the science, to-dos, how-tos, and all of the reasons why what we do is so much more than just a pony ride. And now, from the Hetcher campus in Gretna, Nebraska, here's your host, occupational therapist Katie King.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. I have an awesome guy on today, and I can't wait for you to meet him. His name is Ben Minden, and he is the founder of Bear Hug Cattle Company. So they're based out of Montana, and what they do is they're a vocational training program for veterans that are transitioning from military life and want to get their feet wet in ranching. Ranching is something that's really hard to get into if you don't already have a foot in the door somewhere, and he's just doing fantastic things to help get these guys trained really from the ground up in things like horsemanship and, you know, doctoring, managing cattle, managing ranch operations, all of that kind of stuff, and then helping them find connections for employment. So he also shared with us today a lot of tips on how to build strong community partnerships to keep your vocational programs going and how to keep them sustainable, as well as just recruiting from the veteran population and things that we should know about, you know, really building a good, high quality program. So I hope you enjoy him as much as I did today. He was a super, super nice guy, easy to talk to, and would be happy to, I think, field any of your questions. Their social media is awesome. So if you haven't been over to Bear Hug Cattle Company on Instagram or to their website, head over there because there's a lot more to learn about them. And gosh, some of their pictures and stuff are just beautiful. Montana is such beautiful country. So at any rate, here's Ben. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for stopping by today, Ben.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So why don't we get started with telling our listeners a little bit about you and how you kind of ended up here today.
Yeah, of course. So Ben Minden, I'm the founder of Bear Hug Cattle Company. And Bear Hug Cattle Company is a 501c3 nonprofit that helps veterans who are transitioning from the military into the workforce get vocational training in the ranching industry. So we run a 10-week program where we take four veterans during the summer, and we spend 4 weeks doing horsemanship and then 6 weeks doing on-the-job training at some of the bigger, more historic ranches across the West. And how I kind of got to this point, I spent 10 years in the Army as an infantry officer. And during the last couple of years in the Army, I got super interested in the horse deal. Ran into a guy when I was stationed in Fort Benning, Georgia, who was a reining horse trainer, rode with him for about a year, and then ended up moving over into the cutting horse stuff with another guy, Johnny Daffin, also in South Georgia. Started showing in the cutting and really, really just loved it. And then kind of from there, wanted to get more plugged into the actual ranch work, not just so much the showing. And so started poking around on a couple of ranches, and this is all taking place over the course of a couple of years, and realized that it was just like a really difficult industry to break into if you didn't grow up with it, you didn't know people, you didn't have horses. And so I was fortunate enough to kind of stumble into a path of how to get there from working with a couple of different trainers and then meeting people, and realized that it was just kind of a tough way to go. And at the same time, I was also realizing that a lot of guys from work in the Army were wanting to also do this stuff, but just didn't have the time to spend 2 or 3 years getting weekend or weeknight educations in this kind of stuff. And so myself and a couple of buddies kind of came up with the idea, maybe we could make some kind of program where we could fast track this learning and condense it down into maybe a couple weeks or a couple weekends and help guys get a foot in the door in the industry. And so what we started doing was just taking one or two vets with us whenever we'd go do some work on a ranch. And we realized that there was just a lot of information that you needed to learn, and that doing it for a weekend just wasn't enough to kind of get you on the path to where you could self-sustain with the learning. And so we took a step back and revamped the program and decided to fundraise, turn it into a nonprofit, and then create this 10-week course where a veteran could learn everything that they need to know to go out and then get a job on a ranch or to continue the learning kind of on their own.
Very cool. Gosh, that's what a great idea. I grew up on a ranch family, farm and ranch family. And I completely agree in farming, ranching, a lot of that kind of agriculture based stuff to get into it is hard if you haven't, you know, don't already have that foot in the door. But I also see what the appeal might be, especially for the veteran population. Thank you for your service, by the way.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes. Because it's hard work, but it's so rewarding. And I think that that is something that, you know, probably a lot of your buddies in the military, you know, that resonated with for them.
Yeah, I talk about this all the time. I think that the similarities between the military and the ranching industry are just like, I don't know that there's a career path that's more similar after getting out of the military than the ranching. Like, you're up early, you're doing work outside that's hard. It doesn't matter the weather. It doesn't matter, you know, what time of day it is. Like, you have a job that has to get done. You have a really tight-knit community. You're typically working in a small team doing something difficult. It's just, I think for a lot of people when they get out of the military, those are the elements of the things that they miss. And that's what causes people to have problems when they leave the military and go back to the civilian workforce, is they're missing all those really, really nice things about the military. And then ranching kind of fills that gap for a lot of people, where they do get to go work on those small teams in those difficult environments doing meaningful work. And so and we see it a lot too, with just the volume of people who apply for the program, especially now with a lot of people transitioning out of the military, it's insane how many people are wanting to get into this line of work and realizing how similar and valuable it is to the work in the military, but just don't have that way to get into it.
Mm-hmm. So where is your nonprofit primarily stationed, or like, you know, where are your headquarters, I guess?
Yep. That's a great question. So we're primarily based out of Manhattan, Montana. It's about 15 miles west of Bozeman. But we are all over the place for the whole 10 weeks. And the reason for that is because we think it's super valuable to be able to get to interact with a bunch of different ranchers in a bunch of different places doing a bunch of different things. Mm-hmm. One, because you get to see a ton of different ways of how people do things. And the second reason is to kind of build a network of people that the veterans will get to know by the end of the summer. So how it actually works is we spend 4 weeks around Bozeman, Montana, where we're just doing horsemanship. So we're just learning all the basics of riding and roping. And we do a lot of ranch economics and classes and stuff during that 4 weeks. And then we spend 6 weeks on the road, where we go to 7 different ranches in Montana, Wyoming, and Northern Colorado. And we actually live in canvas wall tents on all those ranches, go to brandings, do that whole deal. And we travel around and get to know a bunch of different people and get to see yearling operations, cow-calf deals, get to do kind of the full spectrum of ranch work in that 6 week period.
Oh, I love that. Okay. I have so many questions. Let's start with the first 4 weeks. So, I mean, maybe even before that, what does your application process look like? Is there certain requirements that you have before accepting? Because you only accept 4, correct?
Yeah. So we only accept 4, and the application process is we open up a written application on the 1st of October and close it on the 1st of November. And that's just basic information like, what did you do in the military? Why do you want to do the program? What do you hope to do with the program afterwards? And so we compile all the written applications during that month. And then we interview every applicant basically from November to December. We choose kind of the top pool of people who we think the program would benefit the most, who would get the most out of it and all that stuff. And then we actually have some of the ranchers talk with them to kind of get a feel for what they're looking for. So we get the input of all the ranches we partner with as well on who to accept to the program. And then by the beginning of January, we pick our our four participants, and then kind of start getting them on track to be out in Montana in May.
Mm-hmm. Because they could be from anywhere. So you have to put them up for housing, you know, and kind of plan all of that ahead of time too. And they have to plan their life to be gone for 10 weeks, right?
Correct. Yeah. So the housing is a big part of it. So we spend the vast majority of the 10 weeks in canvas wall tents, kind of mm-hmm. just staying mobile wherever we go. So yeah, we make that really clear to people during the interview and application process that we do spend the vast majority of time, because, you know, a lot of these ranches are 40 miles from town, and then we'll stay out at a cow camp that's 20 miles from the headquarters. And so we are, you know, we have the horses either turned out or in a pen somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and we're in canvas wall tents right next to there and everything. So we are very far away from modern society mm-hmm. for the vast majority of the summer.
Right. So then your, you know, participants arrive for their first 4 weeks. Tell me a little bit about what that looks like as far as horsemanship and getting the guys connected with horses. I mean, do you see guys that have experience and some that don't, or do you kind of require some kind of horse background?
We actually prefer no horse background.
Interesting.
And the reason for that is because we have kind of a specific way that we like to teach horsemanship. And we've found that if someone has had a moderate amount of horse experience, but in a different school of horsemanship, it's kind of really hard to get them to unlearn those habits and then relearn the habits in the way that we would consider like the right way or the best way. Mm-hmm. So we actually prefer people with no horsemanship experience. I think it's just easier to be able to train people. And like, you see the same thing in the military too. When you get a private to your platoon who grew up shooting with their grandpa, but you want to teach them the right way to shoot, like according to the Army, you have to help them unlearn the way that they've done it their whole life and then teach them the right way. And it's kind of the same deal with the horsemanship. If you have someone who's kind of casually been around horses, then you have to help them kind of unlearn some of those habits and relearn them the fundamentally correct way. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if someone had the knowledge already of how to do all the horsemanship stuff, then like our program wouldn't be that useful for them. So we don't really encounter that. So we prefer guys with no horsemanship experience. And what that looks like in the first couple of weeks is a lot of really, really long days with the horses. And so the people participating in the program will all show up. And what we do is the first 2 days, we just spend in the round pen, just kind of getting some fundamentals down. And so another piece to talk about it is the horses that we ride. We ride all 4 and 5 year olds with typically between 30 to 90 days on them. So they're green horses with new guys riding them. And so we spend the first couple of days in the round pen, just one at a time. And we have the guy who actually taught me how to ride, Johnny Daff, and he comes out to Montana, helps us with that those first couple of weeks of the horsemanship stuff. And so we spend the first couple of days in the round pen, just moving the horses around, getting an understanding of like the concept of pressure and release and all that stuff without the guys actually being on the horses, getting a feel for all the horses and kind of seeing which guys will pair well with which horses. And then from there, we go into 2 weeks where we're just in the arena, just doing all kinds of fundamentals. So learning how to tack up a horse the right way, learning how to get on the right way, learn how to start, stop, turn around the right way, kind of starting to do some of the more advanced stuff, like controlling the different body parts of the horse and why you might need to move a horse a certain way. And then kind of around the 10-day, 2-week mark, we start doing some outside riding where we'll go trot down the road for an hour, or we'll go up into the mountains and ride around for a half day. And so it kind of progresses like that. And then as the guys get more comfortable with being on the horses and riding around, we start to introduce some basic rope stuff, like dragging a log or turning your horse around and facing up as if you were in the branding pen. And so that's kind of the progression. And then actually the 3rd week we go to a ranch Little Belt Cattle Company in Martinsdale, Montana, and we do a week on that ranch. And we do everything from riding health to doing big gathers, moving pastures, and then we actually finish the week with a branding that we do by ourselves, that we run. So we'll brand their late calves. And this past summer, we had one of our participants actually plan and run the whole thing. So pretty cool deal. He'd been on a horse for 3 weeks in his life. And then he planned the gather. We sorted, cows off horseback, set up panels in the middle of a field where we're going to do the branding, set the branding up, roped and branded all the late calves, and then turned everything out. And so that was a pretty cool deal to see, you know, with 3 weeks of training, like everyone was able to, you know, functionally execute a branding. So that's kind of like the foundation of all our horsemanship stuff. Then we go back to Bozeman for a week, clean up a lot of the horsemanship stuff that we learned while we were doing it real world. And then we kind of start our big road show.
That's incredible. I'm just trying to think of like the transformation you must see in a lot of those participants from that first time when they arrive, you know, to the end of the 4 weeks, even. What kinds of, I guess, changes do you see in the guys themselves? I mean, other than their skills, obviously.
Yeah. So one of the big ones that we see is it's a humbling experience, because you go from being a squad leader in the Army or team leader in the Army, you're kind of a senior guy who knows a lot and you're really, really good at what you do. And then you show up to our deal and you know nothing, and you're sitting on a 1,000-pound animal that wants to do what it wants to do, and you're just inherently not going to be good at it. And it's going to be, it might be embarrassing because you can't do the thing that you are trying to do. And it might be tough because you go from being really, really good at something to being at absolutely square zero with something. And so we see guys just get kind of humbled pretty quick with this whole deal, which is really, I mean, it's awesome, because that's something that I think going back into the civilian world after being in the military, it's just like a fact, like you're just not going to be as good at some of the things that you were good at in the military. And so it's kind of just a good quick lesson in like, hey, you know, it's going to take time to learn and develop new skills, whether it be horsemanship or just anything in the civilian world. So that's a big one that we see, is guys get pretty humbled. And another really cool one to see is that they start working as a team really well by the end of 4 weeks. Initially, it's kind of trying to figure out, you know, how best way to do chores and to feed and to make sure things have water and to clean up gear and everything. And then by the end of the 4 weeks, you could kind of start to see everyone really coalescing as a team, which is awesome.
Yeah. I think that horses have a way of humbling us and teaching us things that we don't even know are happening sometimes, you know, until you look back on it and you see all of that progress. What kind of staff, I guess, do you have on your team that, you know, helps you with all of these things? Obviously yourself, and I'm assuming, you know, you mentioned your trainer that comes out and helps you. Do you have anybody on your team that kind of helps you with the rest of it?
Yes and no. Like in terms of formal staff, no. So one of the other co-founders, Ian Concannon, who's happens to be my best friend, and also he's a active duty special forces officer still, he helps with so much stuff. It's unbelievable. So he, like when we're doing the program, is probably working 40 hours a week after work, helping with a ton of the admin stuff, helping with donor relations, helping just get everything lined up, because myself and Johnny Daffin, the trainer, we're kind of just focused on the day-to-day stuff, making sure people aren't falling off horses and everything's fed and alive and ready for the next day. And so he helps with a lot of the forward-looking stuff. And then the ranches that we partner with are super helpful in all this stuff. They go out of their way every day to help us. They slow their whole life down to accommodate, you know, four guys showing up who have been on a horse for 30 days, trying to help them. They'll, you know, run separate lanes in the branding pen for the guys. They'll doctor yearlings for 10 minutes instead of 30 seconds. Like, they'll slow everything down to help the guys learn. And so we have a ton of support. And then this coming summer, we're actually bringing someone on full time for the summer to kind of help with some of the more logistics, admin, donor stuff. So that should be really awesome. And will kind of allow us to free up some time to invest more into the training piece of it.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of vocational things, like, so people who might be listening right now could be running centers that have different kinds of vocational programs for veterans as well. And for any population really that's transitioning. What would be your suggestion on how did you build those relationships, like with those other ranches and those other people that are willing to help you take in these participants and help them learn? I mean, what would be your suggestion to help people find connections like that?
Yeah, I think there's two things that go into that. One is, I think fundamentally you have to have something that is worth people investing their time in. And so I think, and I'm not saying that other people don't have that, I'm just saying for our program, that's what I think was a catalyst for why we had a lot of people be willing to invest their time, is because people can pretty easily see that transitioning from the military into the ranching community is valuable and it's difficult. And so because people see that it's valuable and it's difficult to do, they're willing to give their time and energy to help with that. The second thing is you have to be willing to build those relationships over a long period of time. So it wasn't for us, it wasn't just like we, you know, cold called on the phone 10 different ranches and said, hey, this is what we're doing, do you mind helping us out? Those were relationships that were built over the course of a couple of years, places that I had gone and helped work on, or people that I had met at other ranches who were interested in the idea that we then cultivated those relationships with, or people who had been kind of involved in the whole inception of the idea. And so I think that you have to just be willing to, if you're looking to develop relationships in a specific industry or field, you have to be willing to just put in a few years of time and effort to build those relationships organically and develop that trust. Because for us, at least, I think ranches want to understand and know that the person that they're going to give their time and energy to is a trustworthy partner. And so you can't, even if you have the best program in the world, I think that it, no matter what, it takes time for a partner to buy into the trust in your organization over time. And so for us, I think the combination of having a valuable proposition built over time with trust was kind of what allowed us to have those relationships. And it's still an ongoing thing where, you know, when we're making new relationships, it just takes time, even though we have a lot of trust in the industry already. It just will always be a time consuming process to build that.
Right. And I think too, the other thing that a lot of partners, or even if you look at like funders or anything like that, is they want to see what's the sustainability of it too, right? Like, so after these participants go through this program, you know, then what, you know, is that time and energy going to be something that is sustainable and going to continue, and both within your organization, but also the participants, right? How many years have you been doing this, Ben?
We've been doing it for 3 years. And mm-hmm. then this past year was our first year where we did the kind of revamp and did the full 10-week fully integrated course. Mm-hmm. But I totally agree. Like, whether it be from the donor standpoint or the partnership standpoint with the ranches, they want to know that their time and energy and effort and money is going to go to something that's actually going to get the results that they're mm-hmm. looking for. And so what was really cool about this summer is by the end of the summer, we had, right, our goal is to get veterans employment opportunities on ranches. And by the end of the summer, we had more job offers come in than we had people to fill them, which was like really, really cool. And kind of validating that, you know, there is this demand from the Western industry that they want high quality, well-trained help, and that we're kind of being able to get people to a place where they're able to serve that need. But I totally agree that there is absolutely demand from the partnership side and the donorship, the donor side, that you need to get the results you say you're going to get. And they need to believe that it's going to, the program's going to continue to evolve and be around for the long term.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about on the organizational side of things for you, as far as operating your organization. What does, do you do a lot of fundraising? I mean, you, I mean, that's a lot. Ranching is an expensive hobby. So, I mean, you obviously have some good partnerships through the ranches and things, but how do you do all of your fundraising and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I spend, when we're not doing the program, I spend 90% of my time fundraising. So how that works is we do two kind of big asks per year. Mm-hmm. So we do one the week after Thanksgiving and one the week after Christmas, where we kind of do big pushes to engage with our donors during those two time periods. And then when it's outside of those two time periods, we're kind of just constantly fundraising, talking to anyone who will listen about what we're doing and why it matters. And then I think that if we do a good job of that, of talking to the right people and explaining to them why what we're doing is important and why it matters and why we're uniquely positioned to help solve that problem, I think the fundraising kind of takes care of itself. But it is a massive lift to do the fundraising for this stuff. And you said it perfectly, ranching is not an expensive hobby. You know, we spend $30,000 on hay to feed all the horses from May to September. So it is a massive, massive cost associated with doing this stuff. And so I think that, like we were talking about before, people understand that this is kind of a difficult problem to solve and that we're trying to solve it as best as we know how. And so I think that resonates with a lot of donors. And it's one of those things too, where it's pretty easy to understand why it's an expensive organization to run. You know, we keep 12 horses. We have a 40-foot stock trailer to move all those horses around. We have a 3,500 dually to pull that big stock trailer. We have, you know, to feed and house four people for 2.5 months. It's not an inexpensive endeavor. And I think it's, you know, people who are potentially interested in being donors can understand that. And then pair that with the fact that, you know, we're getting the results that we've promised. I think it is a pretty good combination for fundraising.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard about Hetra's mentoring program? 30 years ago, Hetra started with one participant and a handful of volunteers. Today, we're a large, thriving organization that wants to share our experience with you. We know that the work you're doing is extremely beneficial, but we also know how incredibly difficult it can be. Let us help you understand all aspects of your program, from volunteer coordination, horse management, finances, fundraising, and everything in between, so that you can sustain a successful, thriving organization. Get started now with a free 15-minute consultation. All you have to do is a quick survey, and we'll match you with the best Hetra staff member for your needs. Go to hetrauniversity.org now and click on mentoring. So tell me a little bit about, do you do any kind of program evaluation or that? I mean, obviously your proof is in the pudding, right? Like your participants are getting jobs and that's the whole point. But do you do any other kind of, you know, measurement or metric or survey or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah. Our big metric is how many people are getting job offers and are we producing the quality of participant that we said we're going to produce. So we sit down with the ranchers at the end of the summer and kind of talk to them about what we could do better, what they saw with the guys by the end of the summer, how we could better set them up for success for the next round. And then we also sit down with all the participants, we interview them, and we figure out what could we have done better to better prepare you for X, Y, or Z. What did we need to spend more time on? What do we need to spend less time on? And then we also stay in touch with them once they get job opportunities. Say like, hey, now that you've been a ranch hand for 2 months, you know, what could we have done better? So we just sat down with one of our guys this past weekend and talked to him about, you know, his first 2 months on the job. What did he need more of? What did he need less of? And so we're kind of constantly trying to refocus where we're spending our time during those super, super limited 10 weeks to best assess what we need to do.
Yeah, I think that's excellent idea to check back in with the guys, because you never know. Like you said, I mean, ranches do, you could go to one 10 miles from the other and they do things completely different. So how do you best prepare those guys, you know, with the limited time that you have?
Mm-hmm.
What does your applicant pool, I mean, typically look like? Are these participants that have, you know, families and might have to relocate? Are that, I'm curious how many of them are women that want to get into this operation?
Yeah, so the typical applicant, I would say, is in their 20s and in the process of transitioning out of the military when they apply. And some of them do have families. We haven't had a participant yet with a family. I think it's a really difficult sell if you do have a family, because, right, like we talked about before, you're living in a wall tent for 10 weeks. It's hard. I think it'd be a tough sell for someone with a family. So typically what we see is someone in their 20s who's done one or two contracts in the military, getting out, wants to change careers into ranching, typically single. But in terms of the applicant pool, we have a really, really diverse spectrum of people who apply, whether it be across the different branches of the military, different age groups. And then we do have, I don't know the exact percentage, but we do have a fair amount of females apply to the program. It hasn't worked out yet where the timing of them getting out has worked with our program. Mm-hmm. So like that's a big piece for applicants as well. Like we start in May, if they don't get out of the military until June contractually, then, you know, they could apply, but we can't take them because they would miss the whole fundamental portion of the course. And sometimes if they get out in January, but we don't start until May, you know, they might get a job to fill those 5 months that they can't quit in May to go do 10 weeks of the program. So the timing piece is a big, big limiting factor for who from the applicant pool we could take. And we try and obviously be very upfront about that, so we only get applicants who the timing does work out. But yeah, that's kind of the typical applicants that we see.
I think that's something that we've struggled with too a little bit. We have a big veteran program here at our center, and we've done some vocational stuff, kind of work readiness type things. And that timing piece is huge. You know, by the time they're ready for a program, but then they might already have a job, but then what does that timing look like? And that's a difficult piece for sure. How do people primarily hear about your program? Is it mostly word of mouth, or are you doing direct marketing kind of to folks in that transitional stage?
So I think there's three ways that people hear about the program. One is social media. Mm-hmm. Two is word of mouth from either people that we know in the military or people who have gone through the program who are then telling their old soldiers who are getting out, who are interested in it, about it. And the third one is kind of partnerships with either universities or the Army. So the Army has a program called SkillBridge, where during the last 6 months of your contract, they will support you doing basically vocational training with a civilian program. And so we had someone do our program who was a part of the Army's SkillBridge program. So now that that's kind of circulating through the SkillBridge world, people, when they transition out of the military, have the option to look into our program. And then also partnerships with Montana State University, where their Dan Scott Ranch Management Program is really heavily skewed towards the veteran population. And so we have a partnership with them where our program is kind of shown to people going through that four-year degree. And so those are just a couple different ways that veterans hear about what we're doing.
Yeah. Do you ever, I mean, you probably don't because your operation's a little bit different, but like some of the folks listening now to the podcast that have, like for us, we're a therapeutic center by nature. We do a lot of that type of work. And sometimes we have a difficult time recruiting veterans for our programs, even if it's just a voc, you know, program or something like that. Do you have any tips for, you know, working with the veteran population or with, you know, recruiting them into programming that it might be difficult?
Yeah, we fortunately haven't had much of an issue recruiting people. So I'm not sure that I would be well suited to help with that. We just kind of have tried to build organically via social media, word of mouth, awareness of our program. And so we've been fortunate that the recruiting hasn't been a problem for us. Like the problem for us has been trying to match what we can do with the demand. But I would say in terms of how we got to the point where recruiting is not a problem is, again, we just tried to solve a problem that we thought was really important in the veteran community. And we tried to solve it in a way that was appealing to veterans. And then we started to build that organically in terms of awareness across social media is really big for us. I think that's how we reach a lot of the people who end up applying. Mm-hmm. And so kind of just figuring out a way to tell the story to the right audience is how I think that we've been successful with recruiting. So in terms of advice to people who are struggling to connect with veterans or get their program kind of in front of the right people, I would say taking time to understand what problem it is that you're trying to solve and then figuring out the best way to tell that story to veterans. I think it could be done really well with social media. And then I think it can also be done really well with just contacting the Army SkillBridge program. And so let's say you're wanting to put on a program that teaches guys to shoe horses or teaches veterans how to weld or become electricians, whatever it is, whatever veteran audience you're trying to appeal to. If you contact the SkillBridge program and you meet certain criteria and then can get listed as a certified SkillBridge program, then that will be shown to veterans as they're transitioning out of the military. So that's like one just definite way to get your program in front of more veterans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sort of vets your program too a little bit, right? Like it's already an approved, you know, sort of thing that's not just something that's random, I guess. Are there a lot of programs like yours, not necessarily in the ranching community, but, you know, obviously there's lots of bridge programs for veterans transitioning, but are they typically, you know, like a 10-week intensive sort of thing like yours, or can it be obviously look different?
Yeah, so I think there are two different kind of areas where programs exist right now, and then we kind of fill the space in between. One would be kind of the therapeutic side with the horsemanship stuff. I think there are a ton of therapeutic horsemanship programs that exist out there in varying lengths of time and form. So like Heroes and Horses would be kind of on the extreme end of that. That's a Montana-based nonprofit that does a 41-day experience. It's super therapy intensive. It's really focused on mental health. And then there's, you know, little retreats that do a weekend where you get to interact with horses. So those are kind of the therapeutic horsemanship stuff. And then on the other side of the spectrum is strictly vocational training. The one that comes to mind is we had a buddy from the Army do vocational training to become an electrician after he got out. So that was a few months long. You're going to class every day. You're learning the trade. And so what we're kind of doing is right in between the two. We're taking the horsemanship stuff and the ranching stuff, except we're not doing the therapeutic side of it. And then we're taking the vocational stuff and we're putting those two together to kind of get the horsemanship vocational training.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of programs that do a 10-week intensive course in agriculture training, I don't believe that I know any that do it that way. And the reason that we do it that way is because there's so much information to learn about horsemanship and stockmanship and ranching that, you know, 10 weeks is what we found is the minimum necessary to even scratch the surface of this mm-hmm. industry. And so I would imagine that some other vocations, probably you could learn the basics much quicker because you're not dealing with living animals and big mountains and crazy places. And so I think that we kind of are in a unique industry trying to teach a unique skill set. And that's why we settled on that big, long 10-week intensive course.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever, you had mentioned kind of the, how you're sort of a hybrid between the therapeutic horsemanship and the vocational, more vocational intensive programs. Do you ever find a need for, you know, you get a participant in your program and you see a more of a mental health need, or you see, you know, something like that, that might pop up. Do you have anybody that you can refer to, or have you had that yet?
Yeah, we're fairly well connected with the Veterans Affairs office in Bozeman. So that's kind of the extent of, if we did have something pop up, we could make sure someone has the right level of care.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, how we kind of approach the therapy side of the house is, that is not my area of expertise. I would even hesitate to call it expertise. The thing that I feel comfortable sharing with other people is the horsemanship stuff and the ranching stuff. But I think a lot of that therapeutic stuff gets taken care of as a byproduct of that,
yeah.
Right? Being around a strong community, being around mentors who are helping you stay focused on the right things, having something to do every day that's really important to kind of give you that mental clarity. So I think, although we don't, it's not kind of a explicit part of our program, I do think that this line of work lends itself really well to helping people kind of work through some of that stuff. And so it's not something that we overtly talk about or deal with, but it's something that I think is kind of a side benefit of the nature of the work.
Yeah. That's why I kind of asked you about what changes or benefits do you see, you know, in your guys and your participants? Cause I think it's just inherently there. And I was thinking too about how you guys use, you said younger, greener horses too. And I think that's an interesting parallel, because I can never shut my therapy brain off of, you know, these horses that are kind of green, you know, to this work too. And so are the guys. And so, you know, and they just work through it together and learn everything a little bit together. And I think that's a cool parallel too.
Yeah. It's really, really awesome to see. And it's, right, if we could put together 12 broke bridle horses for our summer program, you know, it'd be cool to have that as well. But we have a partnership with RMO Horses where we take some of their younger horses, we ranch on them all summer and then sell them in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the way that we fundraise. And so it's really good for the program participants to learn and for the horses to learn. And it's amazing to see how the horses transform over a summer of ranching and how the participants transform over that same time. And one thing that we said we wish we had done this past year is really, really try and document the first couple of days and the last couple of days, because mm-hmm. the contrast between the two from the participant side and the horse side is unbelievable. The first two horses that the first two guys climbed on of our summer program this year, they both got bucked off in 30 seconds. And by the end of the summer, those horses had gathered, they had been to multiple brandings, they had roped and doctored 800-pound yearlings. We had from the beginning of the program where it was like watching, you know, someone who was absolutely terrified climb on top of a horse that didn't know what was going on, to by the last couple of days of the program, you know, it'd be myself and one of the program guys going out to ride our circle and doctor yearlings for a whole day by ourselves. And they were chasing down yearlings and getting them roped and doctoring them, giving them shots. It was amazing to see the transformation with both the people and the horses that 10 weeks. It's honestly, it's unimaginable. If you know anything about horses, it's unimaginable how far both rider and horse come in those 10 weeks. And it's really cool to see. It's one of my favorite parts about it.
Absolutely. What was I going to say? Oh, do your guys or participants ever, do they ride the same horse then and build that bond throughout that whole time? Or do you encourage them to ride different horses, or how do you typically do that?
So in the beginning, everyone rides everything just to get a feel for all the different types of horses. And then kind of by the second or third week, we start to pair guys to two horses. And then we have a kind of a pool of like third string horses. So typically there will be each person will have two horses that they ride, and then there'll be a pool of extra horses. Like if one goes lame or loses a shoe or is just sore, then we have some backup ones that we'll use as well. But yeah, it's really cool to watch. It's funny too, the people in the program will get really, really attached to those horses. And even if they're horse is really tired and is not going to be great the next day, they'll still want to ride that horse as opposed to riding a different horse that they don't know as well or don't have that bond with. And so it's really interesting to see the dynamic that develops over just a short 10 weeks with a horse.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask, is that if they get really attached to them and then don't, you know, and then I guess you said that you sell them, so maybe someday someone will buy theirs back.
Yeah. I think eventually it'll be probably pretty likely that when some of the guys leave the program, they'll buy the horses that they've used for the summer and take them on to their next ranch with them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I could see them being a partner in learning and life really through those 10 weeks when it can be rough. And that's, I think, why a lot of ranchers, and I just think about my own family and things, it's, you get attached to those animals because you've been through a lot with them. So I could see that.
Yeah. I still have my first horse that I started as a 4-year-old. I still have her, and probably to my disadvantage, I still have her and use her all the time. And I'll never, ever sell that horse, because for years, she was the only horse I had. She toted me around everywhere. She's been there, done that. And like, right when it's the first horse you start, it's not going to be an amazing product. But I could just never, ever sell that horse because of, you know, all the stuff that we had gone through and all the things that we learned together and all the places that we'd been together, all the country you cover together. I just, like I said, if I was a rational, you know, person, I would have sold her and bought a colt that was better and taken all those lessons learned and made a nicer horse and all that stuff. But I just, when you go through all that stuff with a horse and it's the first horse you ever branded on, it's the first horse you ever roped on, it's the first horse you ever rodeoed on, you just, for me at least, I could just never get rid of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our horses carry so much more than just our butts around, right? They carry a lot more for us, and I think that's why so many of us are in the horse industry that we are in.
Yep. And they tolerate a lot of stuff. So
that's right.
I can, they're definitely partners in this whole deal for sure. And it's really cool to watch people who have never been around the animals make that connection and understand that how much they give. And it is such a partnership, and that's just one of the coolest things to me.
Well, I guess as we kind of wrap up, we might have touched on it a little already, but Why do you keep doing what you're doing with Bear Hug Cattle Company, Ben?
I keep doing what we're doing because I think that we're helping solve like a real problem for veterans. You know, I've had a bunch of people I've worked with and known who have gotten out, had a bunch of trouble finding something meaningful in their work, and then they get involved with drugs or alcohol or suicide. And I think that what Bear Hug is doing is giving people who are leaving the military like a newfound passion and purpose and giving them that why in their lives again. And so I really care about helping people who are transitioning out of the military find that, because that was given to me and it would feel selfish to not give that back to my friends, coworkers, people who I've served with who also are looking for that. And so I think, you know, we've been fortunate to be in a position where we can give that back to people. And so to not do it, I think would be really selfish. And then also just selfishly, I love being around this industry. I love the horses. I love the ranchers that we work with, the people that we get to interact with every day. It's awesome. And so I love the work and I think it's meaningful. And so that's why we keep doing it.
I love that. Before I let you go though, I need to know, how did your name come about?
Yeah, I wish I had a cooler story for this. but it's a question we get asked all the time. But when I was a kid, my mom did a painting on the back of like an old wooden door that was like a big bear sleeping on a log and wrote Bear Hug in underneath it. And then so when I built my house out in Montana, I just, you know, always referred to it as the Bear Hug Inn. And then so we end up creating this deal and just called it Bear Hug Cattle Company.
I think that's an awesome story. That's super cool.
Yeah. No, I like it for sure.
Something that means something to you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking time to sit down with me, Ben. I know you're a busy guy and it's been really nice chatting. I think that our audience is really going to enjoy your story and the tips that you shared with us today. If anyone wanted to, you know, support your organization or, you know, get involved or anything like that, how do they find you?
Easy way is Instagram at Bear Hug Cattle Company, or you can go to our website, bearhugcattlecompany.org. There's a way to just contact us. If you just, my email's on there, my cell phone number's on there. If anyone has any questions or wants to support in any way, just shoot me a text, an email, or reach out on Instagram and we'll get back to you.
Yeah, that's how I found you guys, was Instagram. Your social media is great. So keep it up. Keep up the good work.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much for having
me. Yeah. Thanks, Ben.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode. Until the next one launches, stay connected to our community by joining the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook group. There, we share exclusive educational content, answer your questions, and review new and exciting developments for the EAS community. Don't forget, if you have suggestions for future episode topics or a lead on a great guest that you think our audience would enjoy, click on the link in the show notes or visit us at hetrauniversity.org. This podcast is presented by Hetra University, an educational arm of the Heartland Equine Therapeutic Riding Academy. Hetra University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to our participants and the EAS community. If you'd like to help us work toward our mission, you can make a donation by visiting us online at hetra.org. Again, I can't thank you all enough for helping Hetra change lives one stride at a time.